The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian World Cup Football Daily. Ah, Germany. Just so annoyingly still in the competition. But fair play to Toni Kroos. A wonderful strike gives 10-man Germany a crucial win in Group F. And that late goal means that Mexico aren't definitely through despite a 2-1 win over South Korea. Before all that, Belgium walked past Tunisia in a game where Lukaku scored 2, Hazard scored 2, and Batshuayi should have scored 22. Also today, we'll look ahead to England's game with Panama and the other games tomorrow. Plus, just what will Barry Reid to end tonight's pod, and how long should we keep that feature going? It's today's Guardian World Cup Football Daily. We have a panel today. Philippe Auclair, 2 pods running. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you very much. Still seething, but very well.
Tord Swede Nilsson. I bet you can't guess where he comes from, Barry. Says, I'm upset about Sweden losing. Can Barry Glendening make me happy again? Hashtag used to losing. Hashtag standard Sweden.
I will try.
Mm. What tactics will you use?
Just
general bonhomie?
General badinage and bonhomie. Max, well, tell us how your World Cup sobriety is going.
Well, it was going very well until you weren't in the studio for kickoff. You were in the rotunda bar in the basement.
Yeah.
And then I was in a bar. So what
and that
happened?
Was the end of it.
It was. Mm-hmm. My World Cup now has 2 pints added to it. You can decide whether that makes the pod better or worse. Okay, then Germany 2, Sweden 1. I mean, it seems so stereotypical to want the Germans to go out and sort of cliched, but I really wanted the Germans to go out, Barry.
I really wanted the Germans to go out too. I think that's my game of the tournament so far. It was absolutely fantastic. And I won't lie, I am gutted. Absolutely gutted that Germany won with the final kick of the game. But Sweden have, I think, nobody but themselves to blame.
Indeed.
Philippe, how are you feeling?
Monosyllabic.
Yeah.
Almost onomatopoeic. But again, when we were watching the game from the rotunda, when that free kick was taken, given stupidly by Dermers, I turned to my neighbour. I said, Kroos is going to put that in the corner, top corner. And it happened. It was one of those when, you know, like the Ronaldo free kick, you know it's going to happen. And but again, Sweden have got nothing but themselves to blame for it, because in the 94th minute, John Guidetti, who has just come on the pitch, has had, producer John tells me, 3 touches of the ball, manages in a really promising position not to go for the corner flag, but aim a very weak shot at Manuel Neuer, who can then orchestrate the attack from which the free kick is given and the goal scored. So John Guidetti basically did what John Barnes did for Liverpool.
I've written that down.
Oh, you had written it down. Yeah. I'm sorry to steal your fire at Anfield in 1989. And what David Ginola did so memorably at the Parc des Princes against Bulgaria on a night which will never be forgotten and forgiven in 1993. So John Guidetti is now a marked man.
Do we?
All he had to do was to go to the corner flag and wait for somebody to clatter into him.
Can we give credit, though, to Germany? They probably
do deserved
it. Do
we have
it.
To?
I think we have to, because, you know, we have a great following in Germany as well as Sweden.
I'd like to stress, I have nothing against the Germans. I mean, they're very nice people. Their football team is strangely likable. But I really, really, really wanted them to go out. Because I don't think it's ever happened in my lifetime. Germany, like, limping out of the World Cup in the group stage.
I wanted them to have an England-type inquest. Hey, it did have Euro 2000, maybe. It wasn't Euro 2000 when
they were beaten by England.
Yeah, and
which started Das Reboot.
Exactly, where they went and were sensible and England just carried on being stupid, and that's why Germany are so good. But you have to credit them for keeping on going, and the quality of the free kick.
Oh, it was spectacular.
With the pressure he's under is ridiculous.
Because the draw wasn't much use to them. You know, if they drew that game, Mexico and Sweden could play out in a tidy little nil-niller next week and they'd both sail through into the qualifying rounds. And there's no doubt in my mind that's what would have happened. As unethical as it might be, them's the breaks. So Germany needed to win. And for, you know, they created a lot of chances. Julian Brandt came on. Philippe was singing his praises, saying he should have been on from the start. Said he was the kind of guy who could score one from 30 yards, and he promptly smacked one off the upright. And then this free kick, and you just knew what was going to happen. But the technique, and for him to score under that kind of pressure, you know, that's Beckham against Greece. It's better.
It's better because the angle is so tight and there's nowhere to put it, really.
And the way they take it as well, because it is an indirect free kick.
Yeah.
And so, on the other hand, I think...
Well, I don't think it was an indirect free kick.
They play it as an indirect free kick.
Just to give himself a better angle.
A little better angle, absolutely. You would have to say, though, that there will be... And that's probably the reason why the Swedish manager was absolutely bonkers after the game, is that Germany should have been reduced to 10 men very early on.
Yeah.
There was a definite penalty for Sweden, and he was the last man on. And according to Law 12, since there was no genuine attempt to win the ball, it was basically a thuggish act of taking him out, it should have been a penalty and a red card.
So that's Boateng on Berg.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Although considering how much Germany improved after Boateng left the field, that might have been to their advantage if he'd been sent off early doors.
And maybe the Germans would have sung over the bar, and they would have missed.
I mean, it's one of those where you wonder why they didn't look at it on VAR. Maybe some people say it's not clear and obvious, but the three of us watching in the bar were utterly convinced. I didn't know there was no one else in the bar who thought that was a foul.
Absolutely.
I mean, the only thing is, he kicks the ball, and that in a way makes it look less of a foul than if he just goes down.
Perhaps.
Producer Jonathan says, apparently after the final whistle, two German coaches taunted the Swedish manager, Jana Andersson. So that's why he was very angry.
Okay.
But they deserved it. I mean, Sweden's goal looked at first sight a glorious finish from
Toivonen,
but it was deflected. And then Germany in the second half, they were better, but you know, Sweden had chances as well at 1-0, didn't they? In my notes, I wrote Philippe Auclair on Rudiger. Why did I write that, Philippe?
Because I simply can't understand what a player, despite his physical qualities and his bravery and all this sort of thing, is probably one of the worst centre-backs, I would say, in the Premier League when it comes to bringing the ball out of defence, which seems to me very strange comparing, you know, to when you've got Boateng and Hummels, for example, and he came for Hummels. I suppose it's quite contrasting, and he's a liability on the ball. He was not the biggest liability in central defence, because Boateng was. You will still have to ask the same questions of Germany, in as much as impressive as they were in their, you know, the way they carried on going on looking for that goal, and with great bravery exposing themselves. You still, this team doesn't look very cohesive to me. You still don't know what's the best midfield for that team.
Is there a midfield?
Yeah. And it began, at the end, how many forwards were there on the pitch? It was ridiculous. You had Timo Werner, you had Mario Gomez, you had Julian Brandt, you had
Cruz
Thomas
was more
Müller.
Or less paid as
yes,
a striker.
Absolutely. So it was basically a team. They were playing a kind of 2-3-5. They were back to the heroic ages.
Sorry, not Cruz, Müller.
Müller, yeah, Thomas Müller. So they're still not very convincing, and the defence doesn't look convincing. And also the Swedes had a number of other chances, which it happens to a team that is tiring. When you tire like this, it's not just your muscles which don't react normally, it's also your thinking goes awry, and which is probably what happened to John Guidetti, even though he had been on the pitch for about 30 seconds.
I don't know what your favourite French expletive is, but I certainly wasn't expecting it, Barry, to be Drongo, which is what Philippe shouted at a Swedish player who cut inside when he could have shot. Paul writes, I'm going to be so annoyed when Germany knock England out of this World Cup. Tom says, how many times have a team come from behind to win in this tournament? Interestingly, twice after yesterday, Switzerland came from behind to beat Serbia. And Russell says,
has anyone told Paolo Bandini?
Someone should text Paolo immediately. Russell says, why is everyone excited about the bigger teams going out? Surely the teams that are beating them are by definition better, so that it neither increases nor decreases the chances of any team. I'd fancy England against Argentina and maybe even this Germany side. Oh, does he have a point?
I think Rory Smith was tweeting something along these lines earlier, saying he'd rather the traditional big teams go through. And I can see our listener's point, and I can also see Rory's point, because I think if the traditionally not-so-big teams go through to the knockout stages, I think there's a danger they'll freeze, tense up, play, you know, won't play the natural game that's got them that far, and then end up... It's very sterile.
Or England will win the World Cup and it'll be devalued by the fact that they didn't beat anyone big, in inverted commas.
Ellis James texted me the other night and said...
I'm not sure I approve of this.
And I agreed. I agreed with him that if England do win the World Cup, we're going to come in and do one last pod for the hell of it and then have a murder-suicide pact. Live on air.
Oh, well, it'll get some YouTube hits, I imagine. Right, that'll do for Germany-Sweden. After the break, we'll discuss South Korea, Mexico, and the permutations in Group F. Welcome to part two of Guardian World Cup Football Daily. South Korea 1, Mexico 2. Mexico keep on going, Philippe.
Yeah.
They play lovely football, don't they? They're an exciting team.
They were a bit nervous today because they thought... as we did, that it probably would mean qualification, and we now know that it doesn't mean qualification. You can clarify that for me, Max. I think you've worked it out. But basically, Mexico, despite having won their two games, having 6 points, and despite Sweden losing today, could still be been pipped to the post by Sweden.
Mm. So it's very interesting. If Sweden win 1-0 mm-hmm. against Mexico, then Mexico and Sweden will have identical records.
Okay.
Played, they would have won 2, drawn 0, lost 1. They'll both have goal difference of scored 3, conceded 2. They'll both have 6 points, but Sweden will go through because it then goes to head-to-head.
Okay.
If I've done the maths correctly.
And if Germany beats South Korea.
Well, Sweden will finish above Mexico then. It depends what happens with Germany, South Korea. Obviously, if Germany don't win, they would both go through. So it makes that game very interesting.
Is there a possibility, just a remote possibility, just mm-hmm. to make it really sweet,
okay.
that we could have another tiebreaker and Germany would be eliminated on disciplinary record because Brighton got a red card?
I don't think it goes to disciplinary record.
Doesn't it? No, it does go to disciplinary record. I can tell you that.
Before they draw out.
Oh, fair play, yeah.
Absolutely, fair play is taken. I mean, so there's little hope here.
Barry, but were you saying fair play, Philippe's right?
No, fair play, he's right, but it does go to fair play, yes. And but, they lost.
I watched the game in the company of Mexican fans, even though it was in London. Absolutely wonderful occasion. I thought they were a little bit tentative at times, but they did play some decent stuff. South Korea, I thought, were a little bit...
Sorry, as you mentioned this, if Germany beat South Korea 1-0, they will have exactly the same record as Mexico and Sweden if Sweden win 1-0 as well, right? So they will both have... It will go down to that red card then.
That would be beautiful.
Because Sweden would finish above Mexico, but Mexico would finish above Germany... But Germany would finish above Sweden, so it can't work.
We're probably wrong, but that would still be beautiful.
Anyway, correct us if you want.
Absolutely.
It's a lot of maths. Let's talk about the game itself. I thought that penalty, it was very close. Maybe I just don't know the laws of football, and there's this thing about an unnatural position. But if you slide to the floor, one of your arms is going to go in the air unless you're in a luge, right?
I thought it was very harsh, and I agree with you. I was doing the minute-by-minute, and I said in the minute-by-minute report that I thought it was harsh, and I got a deluge of correspondence from irate readers saying that his hand was up, and therefore it was a penalty. But you can't dive into a tackle like that without having your arms like wide apart. It's, you know, it's kinetics, isn't it? But the South Koreans didn't particularly complain, and the penalty was scored. South Korea, I'm quite disappointed with them, actually. I thought they'd be better. The only time they looked dangerous was when they lumped the ball forward, which is, you know, not their game plan at all. But twice Son got in behind the defence and should have scored on one occasion. He had, you know, he had the beating of them for speed. The two central defenders, Salcido and Marino, no bother. And, yeah, they probably should have resorted to dirty long ball. His goal was a moment of individual excellence, but, you know, too little too late. And Mexico were well worth the win, but not as impressive as they were against Germany, and they showed definite signs of fallibility.
Javier Hernandez, his 50th goal in 104 caps for Mexico, which is an excellent record. I did wonder if there was a foul in the build-up to that.
I think there was, yes.
So you question again, South Korea, with both those goals, not that they deserved anything from the game, I don't think, are pretty unlucky with how they happened.
Yeah.
You thought he played very well, Chicharito.
Yes, indeed. And I think that's the, as it did in the previous game as well. And which begs the question, why is it that he seems to be able to do it with Mexico every 4 years and doesn't seem to be doing it with for his clubs more regularly?
Hmm. Priya Ramesh, a friend of the pod, she tweeted, Chicharito's goal, of course, assisted by current, brackets, probably very, very soon to be former Eredivisie forward Chucky Lozano. And he has looked good, Barry, hasn't he?
He was excellent. Should have scored on at least three or four occasions. Took a few long-range shots that went over the bar, but yeah, he was everywhere, and very impressed with him. I must confess I'd never heard of him before this tournament started, but he has been one of the better players for me, Clive, as they say. One thing I did note as well, South Korea quite clearly had a systematic sort of fouling system going, so players taking turns to foul. Lozano was on the receiving end of a hell of a lot of them. And I think when he got taken off towards the end, he was probably kind of relieved because he got some kicking.
Chucky's first name is actually Irving. It's a shame because good to have some horror movie characters in the World
Cup. Is he called Chucky because of the doll?
I mean, it's a very good question.
He does look, I wouldn't say peculiar, but I can kind of see it, yeah.
Why is Lozano called Chucky? It says, legend has it that as a youth player, Irving Lozano took joy in hiding under the bed on road trips and jumping out scaring his teammates. And so despite his lack of carrot orange hair or facial scars, Lozano became El Chucky after the doll in the horror movies.
I was hoping it had to do with Ricky Lee Jones and Chucky's is in love, you know.
What's Philippe talking about?
Well, a beautiful song.
I don't know, you both missed my Irish reference. Chucky or Law.
No, I didn't understand that.
Chucky's
either.
In love. You don't know that song. Ricky Lee Jones. Beautiful.
Disco Sausage says, I think Mexico will win best away kit by a mile.
I liked it, yes. I was struggling doing the minute by minute to decide what colour their shorts were.
Decided?
I decided on burgundy rather than maroon.
It's an underused colour in football kits. Say yeah. Northampton Town are quite burgundy.
Burgundy.
Hearts? Got,
Venezuela. Because okay. They were actually called something like Vino Tinto, wasn't it? Because the shirt looked like they've been soaked in wine.
Okay.
Now, it is very tight in this group. Germany are the slight favourites to advance in second place. It could get very complicated on the final day on Wednesday, as we've tried to establish. This is from Mads Terkildsen from TV2 in Denmark. He says, if I've read the rules correctly, if they're all on the same goal difference, Germany and Sweden will go through. If the three teams are all tied with points and goal difference, the fourth team will be left out of the equation. South Korea are then knocked out, and then they look at the games between the three teams.
Right? Mini league.
Yeah, and Germany will have a goal difference of 2-2, and Mexico will have a goal difference of 1-1. And then the winner of the group will decide by fair play, which, presuming Sweden don't get any red cards, means they would win the group. So
my goodness.
Let's hope it happens, and also let's hope it doesn't happen. the data website, 538, maps out statistically the most likely who's going to get through. At the moment, one side of the draw, will be Russia, Portugal, France, Argentina, Brazil, Germany, Belgium, Colombia. The other side would be Uruguay, Spain, Denmark, Croatia, Switzerland, Mexico, England and Japan. So there's one side you'd want to be on.
Argentina, really? Okay, all yeah, right.
Apparently. Now, Belgium are favourites to win England's group because they beat Tunisia 5-2, two for Hazard, two for Lukaku. How easy was this for Belgium, Philippe?
Relatively easy, and probably the nature of the game, the time when the goals were scored very early on meant that Tunisia probably they couldn't stick to the kind of game plan they had at the beginning. They're a pretty awkward, niggly team, and they had to open out more. It worked for a while. I mean, they caused some problems to the Belgian defence, which didn't look always as serene as you would hope. Created a few chances, but again, we saw the difference. We've talked about this before, of having proper finishers in the team, and both Eden Hazard, I think the goal was a thing of absolute beauty. The second touch is just magnificent. And Romelu Lukaku confirming that he keeps improving all the time, and scoring an absolutely gorgeous goal with his wrong foot.
Mm. I thought Tunisia were more interesting than they were against England, Baz.
Define interesting.
Well, they attacked a bit. They had some shots.
They had to.
They got absolutely battered. Like, they lost 5-2. They should have lost by more than 10, 12, 14 goals.
I agree with you, but I still think they were more interesting than against England, where they had one shot, which was that
penalty. We should remember that they're doing this World Cup basically without their best player, without their Harry Kane. And therefore, they're going to struggle a bit to score goals. But at least they did give it a go, as they say. But let themselves open to an absolutely frightening counter-attacking team. And also, one thing I liked about the Belgian performance, that I have my doubts about Axel Witsel. I haven't seen him play very well for Belgium for quite a while. I thought this afternoon he was absolutely superb. I mean, in terms of decision-making, absolutely terrific. Also, excellent game by Meunier, mm-hmm. very underrated fullback. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to work. And also, even when Martinez decided to take Lukaku out, then Eden Hazard out, and De Bruyne had a freer role. You could see that could work as well. So he's got wonderful material to play with. We know that. And they've now scored 8 goals, which is as many as the Russians.
It's interesting,
without
actually
being injected with the same sense of enthusiasm as a friend of has said.
I don't know what you mean, Philly.
It's quite interesting that I wonder if, personally, I wouldn't mind, but I think maybe I'm not a professional. Well, I don't think maybe I'm not a professional athlete. Will Lukaku be a bit miffed that he was taken off? He could have won the Golden Boot this afternoon. Like, he could have wrapped it up. Well, Mickey Batshuayi went on and missed several sitters.
He actually
got his goal, but Lukaku must have been sitting on the bench going, oh, God.
He picked up an injury, I think. And actually, Martinez said he might actually miss the game with England.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
But there's a weird situation, going back to what we were previously talking about, where if England win tomorrow, England and Belgium might both not want to win that game because it totally defines, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, England may not beat Panama, and I'd like to take each game as it comes, Clive. But it will be a very strange game, that England-Belgium game, if things happen as we expect them to happen.
I mean, I can think of teams arranging a draw. We can think of two Scandinavian nations doing that. We can think of the
Ireland-Holland.
The old Anschluss Pact as well in 1982. But two teams trying to lose is a new one on me. I have to say, I'm sure there have been instances of that. Teams trying to lose.
But it would just be a very weird, because you'd play a weakened team and those players would want to impress, but the manager would be telling them not to impress. It's like a total mockery. But it'd be good fun. It was quite an open game. Here's some stats. Belgium 23 shots, Tunisia 16. Belgium 12 on target, Tunisia 5 on target. But you're right, Barry. It was very easy for Belgium. For our UK viewers, Phil Neville was co-commentating. And he got really angry with Wahbi Khazri right at the end. I don't know if anyone else spotted this, but suddenly right at the end he went, he's not my sort of player. I never liked him at Sunderland. He always goes missing in these sort of games. And I was thinking, I mean, he's playing against Alderweireld and Vertonghen. You know, it's not simple, that. And he's
not a number nine.
Yeah, and they've not had the ball a lot. Anyway, you know, Phil hates Wahbi Khazri. We don't all like everyone.
exactly.
And that's how the world goes round, I guess.
I wouldn't be a big fan of Wahbi Khosrow because I think he has a bad attitude and was part of the problem with Sunderland. But yeah, I think singling him out for a bollocking at the end of a game in which his team has just been battered 5-2.
And eliminated from the World Cup.
A bit harsh. You know, and as Philippe said, he's not a striker, he's a winger. But he plays up front for Tunisia.
Yeah, but then, you know,
because their Leo Messi is missing.
Right, that'll do for part two. In part three, we'll look ahead to England's crucial game with Panama, the other games, and what you suggested for Barry to read in his dulcet Irish lilts this evening. Welcome to part three of Guardian World Cup Football Daily. England play Panama, 1 o'clock kickoff. Sid Lowe interviewed the Panama manager. It's in the paper today. Really good interview. Let's chat to him now. Sid, he has lived a life, hasn't he?
He certainly has. I must admit, this is one of those occasions the World Cup kind of has given me the opportunity stroke excuse to kind of go and do something different. So I was in Panama for a week or so before the tournament and spoke to some of the Panama people before they played their friendly in Oslo as well, back in whenever that was now, and spent quite a lot of time with the manager who certainly has been about a bit. I mean, this is a guy who's now at his fifth World Cup as a coach. Admittedly, two of those as assistant coach. He's been coach of Colombia when they were beaten by England in '98, coach of Ecuador in 2002, and now coach of Panama. The second manager, along with Omri Michel, to take three different teams to the World Cup. That's not the same as be with three different teams at the World Cup. Before people tell us about what's his face, Bora Milutinovic and people like that, he actually qualified three for the World Cup. And two of them, of course, countries who'd never been there before, both Ecuador and Panama. And yeah, he's been around a bit. He was shot at when he was Ecuador manager, got shot in the thigh. They missed him with the first two shots, got him with the third. Of course, as a manager as well, he was the assistant manager of Colombia when Andres Escobar was shot, and Panama in the build-up to this World Cup as well had a player shot and killed. So quite a lot of what we talked about in the interview was about that sense of pressure, and it's interesting talking to Panamanians as well, because they feel like he is too conscious of people wanting them to lose and too conscious of people being on their backs. And they keep saying, this is just not true. We're all desperate for Panama to do well. But certainly I think he feels the pressure enormously. And yet at the same time, as he says in the interview, I think he kind of needs it a little bit as well.
I often ask managers in English football why they bother with all the stress.
Yeah.
But that is nothing compared to what he's been through. I mean, I presume you asked him, why don't you just go and do something else?
Well, I mean, that's it. I mean, and you know, obviously what happens always, and you know, I don't want to bore people with the mechanisms of writing a piece, but when you speak to someone for a long time, and as I said, I spoke to him across two different countries on three different occasions. So there's loads and loads and loads of material. And then you've got to try and find a way of reducing it. And so you sort of go back over it and think about, well, what's the thing that keeps reappearing? And one of the things that keeps reappearing is precisely that. And it's a recurring theme, the pressure from him. And actually listening back to the tape, it's a recurring question. And I ask him, I think, at least three times, because it keeps coming back to this. Well, why don't you just go then? You know, why do you keep doing this? And then he talks about that sense of kind of needing the pressure. And actually what he says as well is entirely true when he says, you know, you need the ball. And there's a photograph which looks like the classic, which we've used in the paper, which looks like the classic stage photograph of a guy standing there with a ball. And I can promise you it wasn't staged in the sense that we didn't bring him the ball as a prop. We didn't say, here, stand there with the ball. He walked from his office round the corridor through to a balcony where we're going to take the photos with this ball under his arm. During the interview, he's there kind of throwing the ball from one hand to the other. And he starts talking about how he's got this thing about the feel for a football. And of course, he collects these balls. And then this is kind of the point that he's got hundreds of them from all sorts of tournaments. He's obviously going to pick up his fifth World Cup ball at this competition. Because he hasn't got the one from the qualification campaign, because after the first game, he gave it to Roberto Duran, probably the most famous Panamanian boxer of all time, and said, here, look after this, because this, and you know, that guarantees that we're going to get there, and when we do, I'll come and take it back off us. But he hasn't taken it back yet.
Sid, is he a striker? Is a decent fella? Because I know he's got in trouble once for, he had to leave the Colombia job for he hit a woman or something, which obviously is not very nice.
No, absolutely. And he's very... I mean, obviously, you know, look, you wouldn't expect anything else other than this, but he talks about that as being kind of the worst moment of his life, a moment when he says he doesn't understand what happened, he lost control. None of this is to justify it as well at all, of course, but there is at least some contrition there, I suppose, for what that's worth.
Sorry, I guess the question I'm asking is, all this trouble, does he bring it on himself, is what I'm asking?
Oh, I think some of that is probably true. I mean, you know, there's one of the other things is that he talks a lot about the way that Panama had to kind of change their personalities and the way they behaved to make it to this World Cup, because of the previous tournament, they weren't disciplined enough, they weren't focused enough, they weren't professional enough. And yet at the same time, this is a guy that has recognised that when he was a player, perhaps he wasn't as disciplined and as focused and as professional as he should have been, that, you know, would occasionally drink too much, would occasionally have women back in the hotel, that kind of thing. So there are certainly some fairly significant character flaws, I think, as well.
While we've got you, Sid, Spain, has it all sort of settled down, given the sort of slightly bizarre start to the World Cup that they had?
Yeah, I think it sort of has, in the sense that, you know, that initial kind of explosion and the management of it was dealt with relatively quickly and quite sensibly. And I think in terms of, I mean, Carlos Queiroz said this, in terms of providing some semblance of normality and keeping everything under control, and Fernando Hierro was a very good choice. He talked a lot in the build-up to the first game about how this is not something, you know, I'm not going to change anything. I'm not going to change the way we play. I'm not going to stamp my authority on this. And then in a meeting with the media a couple of days before the second game, he said, look, this team is copyright of Julian Lopetegui. This is his team. And yet in the run-up to the second game, his the way he talked changed slightly. And he started to talk about the tactical approach of the other side. Then he changed the nature of the team. And then after the game, he said, which was, I think, only a throwaway remark, but in the context of everything else, I thought was quite interesting. He said, you know, we're going to have to get used to the idea that I'm the national team manager. And so I think there is now a little bit of his personality being imposed upon it. But all the players know they've been through something which is entirely abnormal and should derail them. But I actually think, in the short term at least, it is kind of partly behind them. That said, of course, as soon as anything goes wrong, then this will all come back to the surface again.
Sid, is there any sense that if things went okay for Spain, that Chihiro could stay in place beyond the tournament?
Well, I must admit, I honestly don't know the answer to that, because I think when you look at the things he said, and, you know, he said in an interview that he was asked, would you fancy being Spain manager one day? You know, one day being, you know, the nebulous one day at any point in the future. And he said, no, I'm not thinking about that at all. A day and a half later, he was a Spain manager. You know, this was totally unexpected. It was purely circumstantial. He said that on numerous occasions. He had one season as a coach when he was coach at the greatest club in the world, at Real Oviedo. And despite being at the greatest club in the world, he kind of clearly didn't fully warm to this job. And he clearly wasn't that keen to do it. And so at the end of that period, it wasn't that he then started looking at other coaching jobs, although there were conversations with Las Palmas about taking over there. It was that he was thinking, you know what, maybe this coaching thing isn't for me. So he goes back to the Spanish Football Federation and the directorial role as director of football. And I must admit, I think that if this hadn't happened, we were quite probably looking at someone who would never go back to coaching again. And so I think right now the mindset is, this is a short-term solution. This isn't something that will have continuity. And yet, like you, there's a bit of me that thinks, yeah, but if it goes well, then it's quite difficult to walk away from it. Although I suppose maybe he'll do as Zinedine Zidane, which is to say, I won the World Cup, that's me lot. See you later.
Sid, always good to talk to you.
Pleasure.
England, by the way, obviously, who played Panama. The whole story recently has been about Team Sheet Gate. Gareth Southgate, who is just everything he says seems eminently sensible. This is his quote from the press conference today. He says that my view is, I totally understand the media have a role to report the news. It's definitely an advantage for us or the opposition if you know the tactics of the other team. I don't expect the media to be supporters of us in terms of how they work. I know they want us to do well. I'm really relaxed about last week. The team came out 3 days before the game. I understand it's something we can't control. There's no drama for me about it. The picture the other day was not even the team. I'm totally relaxed. I understand a few of the guys have had a bashing on social media. Sorry for that. I don't wish that on anyone. I've had it myself. We've been open because it's a better experience for everyone. We're not open for anything in return. It's an advantage if the opposition knows our team. It's not the job of the media to protect that. Barry, you almost fell asleep.
Yes, that was a very long quote.
It was, but
it was never going to end. I mean,
was that the
reading between the lines of that?
Wasn't that supposed to be your reading at the end?
Huh?
Wasn't that supposed to be your reading at the end?
Reading between the lines, it's like, yeah, I don't really care, but stop being twats, would be my opinion. I've been looking at some of the journalists tying themselves in knots. I mean, I think it's a tsunami in a teacup. I'm not really sure how I feel about it one way or the other, but you know, I think unless you're at war, you can report whatever information you want. A lot of fans have been getting wound up to a ridiculous extent over it, and a lot of journalists have been sort of defending themselves to circling the wagons to a ridiculous extent, but it's a pretty much a nothing story.
Yeah.
England, you know, put your team out. This is who we're going to play. Come and beat us. That would be my attitude.
It's so ludicrous, because we knew Dele Alli was not going to play, and we knew that Loftus-Cheek would take his place, and we had very good inklings that Rashford was going to start the game as well. So what on earth are people talking about? It's ridiculous.
Like, you have journalists quite literally being accused of treachery,
yeah,
on social media.
I'd string them all up. If they're not going to support our boys,
yeah,
what's the point? I agree
with you.
It's
quite funny.
I mean, I suppose that, I mean, the point is, if it was the final, would it be any different? I mean,
I don't think it matters, to be honest. You know, before a rugby test match, teams are announced 3 or 4 days beforehand.
I mean, times have changed. I mean, you may not remember, or you may know or not know, that during the 1966 World Cup, Alf Ramsey had actually devised his famous wingless wonders system before the tournament, and decided then to put it under wraps because he wanted to keep it a surprise, and actually started playing 4-2-4 in the tournament itself, and only unveiled the system later on in the competition. Now, in that context, you could imagine he would have been, I mean, especially Alf Ramsey, really annoyed if somebody had actually said to the Argentinians or whoever, oh, this is, by the way, the way he's going to play, and there's going to be no Jimmy Greaves, and it's going to be a 4-1-3-2. But that's completely different. This is Panama. I think Panama were beaten 6-0 by Switzerland not that long ago. We should not forget that. They're not exactly the most terrifying team in the World Cup.
I think they're the worst team in the World Cup. They're very poor. I'd be astonished if England don't hammer them.
England are most likely to finish second in this group. That means their round of 16 opponents will be whoever wins Group H. Japan play Senegal in that, and a win for either of those teams will do most of the work towards qualification because...
Sorry, are England most likely to finish second because Belgium put 5 past Tunisia? Because I suspect England might give Panama more of a hiding than Belgium gave Tunisia.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, well, obviously depends on goal difference, and then depends on the England-Belgium result. I mean, I imagine Belgium are slight favourites to beat England, looking at the rankings and looking at how good those teams are. But it's definitely open. Either way, they will play either the team that wins or comes second in Group H. So that Japan plays Senegal. Win for either of those teams will do most of the work towards qualification because they both won their games. Yeah. How do you see that going, Philippe?
I honestly, this is this group for me is the toughest one to predict of them all. I genuinely wouldn't be able to. I was really surprised to see Japan beat Colombia, but on the other hand, in special circumstances because of Colombia being reduced to 10 men. Poland only started to play very late on, and the Senegal goals had an element of luck, shall I say, about them. I think, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there's an own goal in there. So neither game was totally convincing. Neither winner was totally convincing, and neither loser was totally hopeless. So honestly, I think it would be completely... I would be just clutching at straws here.
I mean, there's huge pressure on Poland and Colombia, isn't it? Because they both desperate for a win.
Yeah,
Which means that game should be probably more exciting because Japan and Senegal both feasibly be quite happy with a draw in that second game. But Poland and Colombia both need to win, so both need to go for it.
The one thing you would say that Colombia, despite being 10-11, showed more than Poland did in their game, that because of that, perhaps you would think the Colombians have a slight edge, perhaps. And also given the way that Lewandowski is playing at the moment, who is so important, we know that he's scored all these goals in qualifiers at 16 or something like that, and he's absolutely indispensable. He has to score for them to win. And he hasn't looked absolutely fantastic at the moment, but honestly,
he had a shocker against Senegal.
Well, he's had a shocker in quite a few games with his club as well towards the end of the season.
But is there an idea that, you know, people talk about Lukaku as a sort of flat track bully, that Lewandowski has that? You can accuse him.
I think the opinion that people have of Romelu Lukaku is already changing.
I agree with you,
and will have changed a lot by the end of the tournament. I certainly hope so.
Anyway. True, but yeah. He's only scored against Tunisia and Panama, and the comparison is similar, isn't it, with Lewandowski? When he gets into those big games for Bayern Munich, he doesn't necessarily do the business.
True.
Same could be said of what he's doing for Poland. Other news today, we obviously send our best wishes to Jose Enrico, former Liverpool and Newcastle defender, who's recovering from surgery to remove a brain tumour. 32-year-old retired last September because of a persistent knee injury. Says it's been the toughest few weeks of my life. He's got to have radiotherapy for a while. So we wish him well. New buildings in Feedback Corner says we were discussing Neymar's hair. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he's getting it cut every time and it's going to get smaller and smaller. He says there's only one way Neymar can go now. That will be the Ronaldo-style neat little triangle. Do you remember from...
Oh, yes.
2002, was that?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic hair on that. We learned yesterday about Nigerian fans singing Over the Bar whenever the opposition has a penalty. Anu Adeo, who we spoke to yesterday, he sent a link of a family watching Gylfi Sigurdsson's penalty. Here is this family shouting over the bar. It's fantastic.
Yeah! We caught it, bitch! We caught it! I'm here! Yes! Obadiba! Obadiba! Obadiba!
Oh, it's so wonderful. I hate to think from that, Barry, that your final reading tonight may be an anticlimax. Do you want to hear what your options are?
Go on.
Okay. Lawrence says, next up for Glendening has to be the theme tune to Rainbow. Hashtag up above the skies. Ray says, this is a World Cup after all. How about Barry does TV shows themes from around the globe? Home and Away seems to be the obvious place to start. And we still have Quentin's Barry Please, My Humps by the Black Eyed Peas. Philippe Auclair, it's your choice. Rainbow, Home and Away, or My Humps?
I'll go for Home and Away tonight.
Okay.
I think I could possibly do this without needing to read from a script.
There you are. There are two there are two lines for me in this one, actually. But okay, Philippe, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
You know we belong together, you and I, forever and ever. No matter where you are, you're my guiding star. And from the very first moment I saw you, there was such emotion. I'm walking on air just to know.
Just to know.
You are there.
You are there.
Hold me in your arms. Don't let me go. I want to stay forever. Closer each day. Home and Away.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.
Are you sitting on the floor of your hotel room, Sid, with the phone plugged in on an inconveniently located socket?
Yes, that is exactly what I'm doing. But what's even worse is it's not just that I'm sitting on the floor. The only set of plug sockets, and there are four of them in a row, but they're right in the corner. I'm not just sitting on the floor. I'm sitting on the floor, waiting in the corner, looking like I'm having some sort of mental breakdown, kind of hunched in the corner of the hotel room.
Well,
while at the same time, the air conditioning unit, which is supposedly off, keeps turning itself on for reasons I don't understand. This place is very strange. Here's another one for you. This hotel room, there's a little table, and it has a mug on it, and a teaspoon, and two tea bags, right? Mm-hmm. Which is obviously really helpful. It has no kettle.
You could just have warm water tea, Sid.
Don't know what it expects me to do with those tea bags.
Okay.
I don't want to go there.
I'm glad you said that, Philippe. Although I'm not sure you actually need a real tea bag for whatever you're suggesting. Anyway.
No, anyway.